another episode of the 10-4 show here with a friendly face here on Channel 9. Hey, Glenn, how's it going?
I'm doing good, Jason. How are you doing?
Very good. So we're here to talk about meth. Lovely things. We all love meth. And specifically Preview 7 and some of the stuff you guys are doing around Silverlight.
Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun building a Silverlight version, and we've been adding some Silverlight-specific features. A lot of the features that we're adding will eventually make it into the desktop, though there are some things that are different about Silverlight, which we're taking advantage of. But some of the hot items is we've added some XAML integration work to make it easier for building applications that are XAML-based where they want to take advantage of MEF. And you know, what you find is when you start dealing with composition and you have XAML there, you start running into a bunch of challenges because you want to just like drop a button, let's say, anywhere in the XAML, and you want that thing to also have imports. Maybe it's extended where it has some special behaviors or something like that. Today, you really have to jump through a lot of hoops to do that. You have to kind of expose that thing as a field by giving it an X name, and then you have to actually know, you know, in some of the outer code, exactly which things need to get composed. So it's almost like you're creating a tighter coupling in the name of decoupling.
Right, yeah.
So we've kind of done some work to make that really easy. We've also done some work to enable more line of business scenarios where you have, like, imagine order entry application and you have multiple orders that can be opened at any time. You want to be able to say, ooh, new order, and suddenly a new order form opens up and that thing might have its own imports different from another order.
Right.
And this has to happen after the app has initially been composed. So today the way you end up dealing with that is you have to expose the container in some way and make it available to the application so like a controller can import the container. Mm-hmm. And it's a bad practice because it starts coupling other parts of your application directly to the container.
Right.
So what we've introduced is this new thing called Part Creator that lets anybody who wants to be able to create parts dynamically on the fly, they can just take this Part Creator of T and get going.
Nice.
And the other thing we've done is remove a lot of the bootstrapping code. Anybody who's built a MEF application knows, like, the first thing they do is they start creating catalogs, creating a container, adding stuff through a batch.
Yeah.
You'll see with the stuff that we're showing you now that we've actually made it so that you just have to call one line of code and automatically everything bootstraps up.
Yeah.
More code if you want to change that bootstrapping. Yeah. But if you just want to use the default that will be usable for many apps, it just works.
So if I'm in a WPF app or Silverlight app, I don't necessarily have to go in and change up the startup URI and change it over to a method and then wire up all my code and all that kind of
exactly. stuff. Exactly. And I mean, the idea is that you don't even have to create a container.
Right.
You know, so, we want to kind of, you know, like push it more down level.
Right. So one thing I especially love about the MEF team and working with the MEF team is this whole CodePlex thing. I mean, the features we're talking about now, yes, we're actively going on, and there's already current bits for the first beta in Visual Studio 2010 that shipped. But what's this whole shipping to CodePlex thing, Glenn?
We're just revolutionaries. No, I mean, we you know, I think it's two things. I mean, one, we want to let customers get much more involved in the design of what we're doing, and we want to do it in a way that's less friction. So putting it out to CodePlex provides that means. The other thing is, MEF ships under an open source license currently. So, like, Mono folks can take MEF, and there's a slight change that you have to do, and this is a long-standing blog post that I haven't gotten out there, but you can get MEF, for example, to work on Mono.
Mm-hmm.
So having it on CodePlex under an open-source license enables those usages, also enables people to fork the code if they want to.
Yeah.
But I think for us, it really gives us a great feedback loop where we can get instant feedback as to, you know, whether this works or doesn't work and meets the needs.
So the people out there watching this video now could theoretically go up to the site on CodePlex, the CodePlex.com for MEF.
Yep, MEF.CodePlex.com.
And actually grab Preview 7 for
right.
the latest and greatest MEF bits.
That's right. And Preview 7 will contain two zips in it. We've split out Silverlight from our desktop bits.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to announce is we're basically with Preview 7 feature complete for MEF V1.
Very cool.
So what you're going to start to see is that on CodePlex you're going to see our next release of MEF in the framework. We are starting that immediately.
Already on to the next
thing. So we are already on to the next thing. You know, I've been at Microsoft 4 years, and I'm kind of still getting used to the fact that MEV V1 hasn't shipped yet. We've almost completed MEV for Silverlight, and we're starting the next version.
Right. Cool. Well, let's go ahead and dive in and look at some of this MEV for Silverlight stuff.
Okay, cool. So one of the first things you'll see when you download MEV for Silverlight is we've included this picture viewer sample. We included it in Preview 6. In Preview 6, and I don't have it installed on my machine, you would see a lot of the mental gymnastics I'm talking about of trying to get this image viewer to have parts in it that are composed, which are laid out in XAML.
Right.
And just to refresh people or those who haven't seen it, if I run the picture viewer sample...
Okay, so what's this picture viewer about, Glenn?
Okay, so the idea of this picture viewer is a couple of things. One, it's demonstrating MEV's usage on Silverlight. Here we've got a Silverlight application where if we look at the source, you can see I've got several different projects. I've got picture viewer extensions. I've got picture viewer albums.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that are decoupled and that MEV is putting together.
Right.
Now, one of the other things we shipped for Silverlight that currently ships within our bits, but we're actually going to be moving it to the Silverlight control toolkit, or Silverlight toolkit, is a package catalog. And the idea of the package catalog, it's kind of like the uber desire of folks that are building Silverlight applications, that they want to download assemblies on demand other than the current Zap.
Mm-hmm.
And we've created a thing called the package catalog that actually allows you, it's a catalog that you can use to download packages from a server dynamically on the fly. This is kind of like your Prism modularity type example.
Right.
Or if you think about a line of business app that might have 700 screens, and you don't want on the startup to be downloading the entire application, you want to do it in a piecemeal fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So Picture Viewer actually uses that so that those album viewers that you're seeing, those actually show up in an on-demand fashion. And it uses an asynchronous download so you can get the notifications when they're received.
Right.
Now, because MEV supports recomposition, what happens is as soon as that thing shows up, anything that was recomposable, in this case the collection of viewers that was bound to, automatically updates to show the latest ones.
Nice.
Now, let's take a look. So if we go back to the application, we see we can click around here, we can go to a picture view, we can go to a collected album view, we can navigate. If we go to the if we go to the picture view, we can use this navigation on the side to move around. Let's take a look at how this is working under the covers and what are the things that we've added in.
Yeah, great.
So, you know, I mentioned how in MEV, you know, when you're creating MEV applications, you normally have this entire bootstrapping process you have to go through. In this app, there's still a slight bootstrapping process, and that's because we want to change the default way of how things work. But let's take a look at that. So anybody who's looked at our other bits for Preview 6 would see that in our app we had a ton of code that related to MEV.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see there's no code. Now, it didn't completely disappear because we created this thing in the sample called the package loader. Why we have the package loader here is because the normal default configuration of our XAML host or of our container host that we create just looks at the current ZAP, takes all of the assemblies in that ZAP, grabs the exports out of them, and puts those exports and those parts into a default container.
Mm-hmm.
But in our case, we want to be able to download asynchronously, so we want to change that configuration. So how I change that configuration is I have a static call to a method called initializeContainer. In that initializeContainer call, I pass it the container that I want to be the default that will be used for composition throughout the application.
I gotcha.
And because MEV is highly extensible, this means if I wanted to, I could configure a MEV container that talks to, say, Unity
mm-hmm.
by writing a custom export provider. And now I could be having parts within my XAML that are actually getting satisfied by Unity, but it's going through MEV. Through this vehicle. Okay, so I've called this initialize container, and that has this create container method. In the create container method, you can see that what I'm doing is I've got this package catalog that was created. I'm adding that package catalog to my composition container.
Okay.
Package catalog is that special catalog that allows us to download things asynchronously from the server. And now I have a method that I've exposed on this package loader called download and add package async. And I'm accepting a URI. Once I get a URI, I'm then going to download the package, which accepts the URI and accepts a lambda or a callback. And once that callback fires, now I just add that to the package catalog, yeah, and my app is good to go. If we look at where that is actually getting used, deep within one of my photo albums provider stub, it's going to go ahead when it gets instantiated, and it's going to get instantiated by Mef, because you can see I have these imports and etc. And he's going to now go and say, go get me albumpackages.zap. So that is the on-demand download happening right there. Now, if we move to look at the compositional side, if we go into our main window, you can see here that I have this viewer, browser, controls. These are things that the XAML parser creates for me, but they actually have MEF imports. And this is where the mental gymnastics starts to come in, where you have to start to say, oh, well, now I have to expose this as a property or a field, and I have to have code in my code behind that does the, that takes those instances, creates a compositional batch, adds them to the container, and composes. And you're like, why the heck do I have to do this?
Right.
Let's look at how it works now. If I go in my browser now, all I have is one method called satisfy imports. Once I call satisfy imports, these imports are going to get satisfied. Notice that this part has no dependency on the container. Now you might be saying, well, why do I have to make this call? Shouldn't it just work? But the problem here, again, is when we talk about existing frameworks, like the ASP.NET provider model would be another example, those frameworks have already been written to instantiate stuff, like the XAML parser. And we may or may not be able to change the XAML parser, but this provides a technique that, although it's one additional line of code, it actually doesn't greatly impact the design of your components, and it allows you to now say that the host is removed from any knowledge that I actually have things that need to get satisfied. So if I was writing a third-party control that depended on this, I could say I'm a third-party control that's going to allow people to write custom behaviors. And I don't want the host of the application host to have to know that they have to do a bunch of configuration for that to work. Mm-hmm. So I can just ship my control, have this dependency and make this call, and know that whoever puts in the current zap one of these I behaviors, it's going to get satisfied.
Right. Very cool.
So this is kind of a more complex example. I made a very simple one, which I wanted to show, because one of the other features we have is this great thing called Part Creator.
Yeah, let's dive into some of that.
Okay. Now, just a warning. This is an extremely simple sample, and it shows off just how bad my design skills are in terms of UI design.
Dude, that's fine. The extent of my design skills are console.writeline. So I think you're...
I don't know. I've seen your parallel extensions demo. That was pretty good. So this is like your average order entry app.
Right. Now,
here we have a screen, and we have a new order button. And when I click the new order, I get a new order.
Right.
Now you might be saying, well, what's so special about that?
Right.
What's special about that is my order has a view model, right? I have my order view needs an order view model. Yeah. And I want to dynamically on the fly create new orders. Right. And I don't want to have the application have to depend on the fact that it has a hook to the container, or that the host had added the container to itself. One of the reasons I don't want to do that is because exposing the container exposes too much surface area. That means that any third party can do whatever the heck they want once they have a handle to it.
And for people that aren't familiar with ViewModel, you can pause the video now. There will be a link in the show notes to get up to speed with ViewModel. So,
good point.
Yeah, moving on.
Yes.
So, are you telling me that it wasn't a simple just handle the button click event? You didn't cheat?
No.
Okay, so what's this doing?
So, and just to make a call out, when you deal with view model in Silverlight, there's a couple of challenges you have that, you know, a lot of view model is based around having commands, I commands.
Mm-hmm.
Silverlight 3 ships the I command interface, which means you can write view models that have I commands on them. It doesn't give you an implementation of command, nor any infrastructure for calling a command. So there's a bunch of frameworks out there, including Prism, that provide their own ways of doing this through attached behaviors and through custom commands. I'm using this pretty cool toolkit that Laurent Bunyan put, I know I tore his name up, put together called MVVM Lite.
Cool.
And it includes some cool little helpers that you can use for writing view models.
And he's another Niner, so shout outs to the Niners.
So the first thing you'll notice, keeping my word, our app now has no code.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no code in our app.xaml.
Specific to
the
container.
Sorry.
Right, yeah.
There's no code in our app.xaml specific to the container.
That's pretty impressive, no code.
There's no code in the app.xaml specific to the container, right? Okay, so let's look at our main page XAML. It's as simple can be. It has a stack panel which accepts views, and it has a button called new order. Now I'm using view model, so I do things through data binding. This command.buttonBaseExtensions.command, that's the MVVM Lite toolkit.
Gotcha.
It's got an attached behavior for setting a command, right? So I'm saying, oh, I'm going to set the new order command as the command that I'm going to bind to when I click the button. For those of you that don't really know about view model, just to give you the quick idea here, is in the past we would do everything through events and click handlers.
Right.
And here you can see that all I'm doing is declaratively specifying a command and it works. If I look at my main page code behind, there is one thing, a couple of things you'll see that are interesting. One, I'm calling part initializer satisfy imports. So you can see here that although I didn't initialize the container, I can call this method.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I doing that? Well, I'm going view first. Jeremy Miller will probably have a bone to pick with me, but here I'm demonstrating, folks, view first. So I've got my view. My view is importing my view model. Okay? And then what it's doing is it's setting my data context to my view model. And my view model is throwing an event called show order event.
Mm-hmm.
Once it gets that event, it's going to go and add that order to that stack panel. Okay then, let's look at our main page view model. So our main page view model, notice we're able to use our constructor injection that MEF supports, because now that I've gotten past satisfy imports, they're just regular parts.
Right. Yeah.
So I can use whatever's available to me. So this guy has an export on him. He's got an importing constructor, and he's importing a thing that you probably haven't seen before if you're not familiar with MEF Preview 7, part creator. So you notice it's part creator of T. This means that I'm saying I expect to be able to create new order views on demand. Now, there's a hacky way of doing that today in the container, because you can set your part creation policy to non-shared, but again, then you need the container, and you'd have to pass it in, which is ugly.
So this is another example of breaking down the dependencies where the new keyword almost becomes a bad word. You want the actual creation of this dependency satisfied by someone else.
Exactly. And the reason I want that is because if I look at my order view, I can see that he depends on an order view view model. Mm-hmm.
So this is this is something that I like about the power of MEF, is that entire dependency graph. When you're trying to construct a new object, you don't have to new up, 12 other objects that might go all the way down the dependency graph.
Or 13 factories.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The tool factory, the screwdriver tool factory, factory,
exactly.
Factory.
The factory, 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 yeah. Factory, as Hack likes to say. All right, so now I've got my main page view model. I save a copy of my order view factory so I can use it later. Here is where I'm using some of the MVVM goodness, the MVVM toolkit goodness that I mentioned, which is the relay command. And the relay command is an implementation of iCommand that lets me just pass it an action. And in this case, my action is that when anybody clicks on this new order command, which is here, which I'm setting to the relay command, what it's going to do is it's going to call create part. Now notice create part is not passing back an order view. It's passing back an order view context. Why is that? Well, the reason for that is that sometimes when you have parts, those parts may have disposable resources on them. MEF does a very nice job of allowing you to clean up an entire tree of transient disposable resources, where anything in the tree, where it's not like I disposable, it's like this guy's I disposable, this guy's not, this guy is. We will walk that entire graph. Hmm. If you want to take advantage of that, then you want to save this context object,
right?
And basically when this thing goes out of scope, you want to call dispose on it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to put it in a using in this case because it would immediately get disposed.
Right.
And in this case, we're creating a view that we want to hang around. So now, just like with lazyft, I access a property. In this case, it's called exported value. That now gets me my order view that was constructed on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I have that, I'm just throwing my event, which going back to my view model, it's subscribed to. So let's just put a couple of breakpoints here and track actually the way this is working here. So we'll go to our order view, we'll put a breakpoint on our importing constructor here, we'll go to our main page, we have a breakpoint there, and then we will go into our main page, our main view model, and put a breakpoint here.
Sounds good.
So we can see how everything goes. Okay, so I click new order. The first thing you see that happened is my order view got created. Actually, the reason that order view got created is because, let's see here, my new order command was invoked.
Mm-hmm.
But why didn't my breakpoint show? That's an interesting thing. Okay, there we go. Ah, right, because of the fact that it created the view. So it mm-hmm. went through the factory, created the view, that's why we hit that order view breakpoint, right? Now, I'm at the point where I'm going to throw my show order event, and now I'm going to add it.
Nice.
And there you go.
Yeah. So that's some really cool, exciting stuff that you guys are doing in Preview 7. Now, I know those people that are out there that are, let's say, IOC fans or something like that, see all these attributes everywhere and are perhaps, you know, throwing up a little in their mouth. But what are some of the cool things that come from those attributes? I mean, when you're declarative, I understand Nick on the team created a pretty cool diagnostic tool that you can get.
Absolutely. I won't. What I'll do is I will show you his blog post.
Yeah, that would be great. And we'll link to it as well in the show notes.
He's created a bunch of tools. Nick is a bit of an animal. The first tool that he created was an API based tool for analyzing MEF assemblies.
Right.
And then we were all on the team like, great, you made that progress. Now we need some kind of command line tool.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I need that command line tool is I'm going to be in a deployment environment and I want to be able to just run against a bin folder and say, you know, where are the problems?
Yeah.
And the kind of problems that it's analyzing is saying that, you know, when MEF looks at importing things, it rejects them if they don't satisfy the criteria of the importer.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if you're importing an iFoo, and you're saying that you expect that iFoo implements a certain type,
mm-hmm.
right? The contract name is iFoo, but you're saying you actually want it to derive from this type. Usually they're the same, but sometimes they're different.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's a string contract. If somebody else comes along and he says he exports the same contract, but he doesn't match on the type, that guy's not going to show up
right.
when you try to import him. And you may be like thinking, well, why isn't he there? The other thing we have is a thing called rejection. And what rejection does is quite interesting. Basically, what rejection does is if you've got a part that has an import, and that import cannot be satisfied, then that part just gets flat out rejected. We say there's no reason for us to try to create this thing because we're just going to have to throw an exception because it's going to blow.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to cause people a lot of pain because when it blew, it corrupted the entire container because you now had this broken part that you would keep hitting no matter how many times you told it to compose. So what this tool does, if you zoom in on the screen, you can see that he's given us a command line tool called MEFX. And you can point it at a folder and get all kinds of information, like what are the available exports, what are the available parts, which parts are rejected.
Right.
This allows you to even put this into a continuous integration environment. you know, like you're running cruise control or something like that, and you want on the build server to run a step, which is going to output the results. It's very cool stuff.
And something that's made possible by using a declarative model.
Yes, we forgot to drive that home. Yeah. Yes, because what Meth can do is it can look at all of the assemblies in the directory, figure out what the parts that are there, and the way it figures out those parts is it uses this interrogative approach of using these attributes.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to know some arbitrary XML file format or anything like that.
Exactly. Now, just to show people, we have actually gone ahead and made it really easy to take our MEF attributes and morph them a bit.
Yeah.
So, for example, you can now create custom export attributes.
Nice.
Like, if I have an interface, let's have an interface called iView. I can do a couple of things. I can create a custom attribute called view attribute. And I can say that that guy is an export attribute.
Right.
And I can even do things like add on him a metadata attribute. Well, why would I want to do that? Because what I can do now is I can say that a view has a name. If I want to allow providing a name. And I can say that this new attribute automatically exports type of iView. Now, we've added this name parameter. I want that to be metadata that I can use to access MEF because I'm loading it in a lazy fashion or I'm querying the container and saying, give me the view named this. Well, now what I can do is just add a name parameter, and we do things conventionally with MEF. This is a new attribute that I can just go throw on a view.
So in this case, do you have to derive from iView?
I have to actually specify the name. Because I gave it a name parameter as a required. Now, there's one other thing you have to do here, or this will fail miserably when you add metadata, which is you need to set this attribute targets. And more importantly, because we have a default, which is everything, but more importantly, what you need to set is this allow multiple to false. Because if you set it to true, it's going to automatically assume that there could be multiple view attributes on the same member.
Right.
And it's going to take all that metadata and put it into an array.
Gotcha.
If you haven't dealt with this, don't worry about it. But if you run into a problem writing custom attributes, just remember what Glenn said. Go back to this and take that attribute usage thing and throw it in. So this is one way that I've now been able to add my own language on top. And it is a MEF export, but the part author doesn't know that.
Yeah, it's very much domain specific.
Exactly. Yeah. I can also do this. I can also use an inherited export attribute on my iView like this. If I do that now, automatically anybody who implements iView
will automatically
exports
export,
iView.
Which is great.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
So we've given a bunch of different ways to move those attributes. They're still there, but where they become either domain specific or more behind the scenes.
Yeah. It's very exciting. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with us and discuss all this Preview 7 juiciness. And
no problem, Jason.
It's been an absolute blast. So until next time, this has been another episode of the 10-4 Show on Channel 9.